Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Matt's Planning. On today's episode, I have an expert on who I'm very excited to speak with. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
Hi, my name is Odin Tangvald. I am a licensed professional clinician, in other words, a therapist in New Jersey. I consider myself an expert in neurodivergence and working with individuals who are neurodivergent.
Fantastic. Yeah, I feel like I know quite a bit about neurodivergency. I feel like I've met a lot of people that have experienced that or currently experiencing that. And I think the easiest way to understand neurodivergency is to think about it in the initiating instance when neurodivergency comes up. Usually people will be walking through the woods and people will come across a path and it'll go two separate directions. The standard is the road less traveled by and the more commonly used road on the other side. And people, they have to make a choice of which road they're going to take, and it can make a big difference which one you decide on. And I think that the people that are neurodivergent, their nerves, as opposed to like thinking about like, oh, this is the road or this is the road, their nerve endings actually, like their nervous system itself pulls them to either road, usually the road less traveled by. And so that's the one that they ultimately decide. And then people that are on the other road, you know, might interact with them. That's the thing that people don't talk about, is these roads intersect quite a bit. And they don't understand, like, why would you take that road? That doesn't make any sense. And that can make it really difficult for some people, because it's like, I took the road less traveled by because it seemed more interesting. And, you know, that was the one that, like, I was pulled to by my neurological impulses. And then I think that a lot of people with neurodivergency, they don't think about the just fundamental ideas of divergence and how that can manifest. So some people think of neurodivergency and they think like, oh, they're taking a different path or they're approaching something in a different mindset or way, but they can also just fundamentally approach something in a way that is unexpected, but that can also be the opportunity to see factors and see things that other people might not see. So for instance, somebody might have an impulse to take a look at the ceiling and be like, oh my God, that ceiling is carpeted. Why would they carpet the ceiling? And then that facilitates a conversation about how that establishment used to be flipped and they had to carpet the ceiling because they had a bunch of furniture. Their design aesthetic was to put the furniture on the ceiling, staple it in, nail it in. And then people were like, oh, this is so trippy. This is not what I would expect out of, you know, a bar or what have you. But then they realized, you know what, this is, we have no place for anybody to sit in the bar now because we put all of the furniture on the ceiling. So probably not the best option in terms of like all the bottles kept falling down because they tried to put magnets on everything, but bartenders do what they do. So it kind of ended up falling. And so like, that's how we find out about the kind of, okay, we've tried something new.
I love this. I'm going to stop you on that one though, because at the same time, like you nailed some stuff right out the gate with this.
Okay.
But I do have to say, like, some of it's more along the lines of, like, kind of sensory stuff and more along the lines of, like, framework for understanding human brain function. Some of the things, like, I love the Whitman-esque analogy that you go with it, with the road less traveled, mainly because, like, a lot of the times neurodivergence isn't actually much of a choice. It's kind of almost an impulse.
I see.
I work predominantly with a lot of people who struggle with autism, ADHD, Tourette's. Myself, I'm diagnosed with ADHD. I refer to it as like the Diet Coke of autism.
Because that's a very fun analogy.
Because at the same time, it's half of the like the difficulty, but all of the social functioning still. And in the same this too, like you actually nailed it right out the gate for a couple of things, even in regards to the flipped perspectives of a place that would be flipped in regards to even like having carpet on the ceiling. Thinking outside the box is ultimately one of the biggest strengths of neurodivergence, but it's ultimately one of the biggest frustrations, for lack of a better word. Historically, a lot of people who are neurodiverse struggle with being heard or understood along that analogy of like, it's not what you said, it's how you said it. Mm-hmm. And interpretations of that in and of itself can be difficult over long periods of time. And that struggles in regards to like, autism spectrum, ADHD, Tourette's, dyslexia, the whole bit. in regards to that spectrum is more along the lines of the neurodiverse impulse comparatively to the choice of that. Jesus, if I had a choice to be able to, you know, be neurotypical versus neurodiverse, it would be a lot easier. But I do think that oftentimes it's more along the lines of having a difficulty by comparison with that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that they say that blondes have more fun. I think that neurodivergent people generally have more fun because they can, at least by my experience having dyslexia and ADHD, you can kind of amuse yourself with the oddities that you perceive that other people haven't perceived. And then, so I don't, maybe it's not to one-to-one of blondes have more fun. There's definitely struggles that I have, but it's like, oh, I can just enjoy the world a little bit more.
True. But I do think in that level of enjoyment too, comes the emotional regulation component. That's not right. Often about, like, you experience more, you have more fun, but you also love harder. You get hurt harder and easier, that kind of glass cannon perspective. And that can be really difficult to regulate over time, especially if you don't have like beneficial coping skills for being able to understand what a diagnosis is or like how that impacts your life on a daily basis. It can be daunting. And at the same time, I feel that later in your life that you know, go to therapy, talk to somebody who understands, it can hit harder and in much different ways by comparison to.
Absolutely. My experience with it is maybe not the most typical or anything like that, but I've found instances of when I was first getting into the workforce and stuff like that, I would read feedback for things and really take things personally, even though this is a standard thing. This is standard feedback that you would get. You don't know what you're doing yet, and you need to have feedback to be able to do it. But I would take it personally and not understand the dynamics, and speaking to a therapist and being like, oh yeah, that's just you being a little bit more sensitive about those things because you're kind of got these worries.
And especially with things like, I have certain phrases that I tell people in particular, like, please don't use this around me because it'll evoke an emotional reaction, such as like, we need to talk, or right. How about Google it? Like, oh God, all right, I gotta go like see myself out for a minute or two. Like, even minute things like that, it's not even a criticism, and having to rework that with people can be really difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, one thing that I noticed with myself was the dynamics of prioritization. So like with partners and friends and stuff like that, when people would say, can you take out the trash? And I'd be like, yeah, I technically can take out the trash, but it doesn't seem like it's something that is pertinent and I need to do right now. Whereas if they say, take out the trash, or will you take out the trash? It prioritized it differently and categorized it differently in my mind to be like, oh, they're asking me, truly asking me to do something. Whereas other people are like, yeah, all of those have been me asking you to do it. And I'm like, technically in my brain, it wasn't. So
that sounds about right. And especially in regards to motivation and executive function by comparison, say like, I tell you to do the task and you do the task. If it's something I don't want to do, where I see you as an authority figure, I'm going to dig my heels in. Absolutely not. Little teenager in my brain saying, we're not doing that.
Right. Absolutely. What got you most interested in trying to study this and to help people with it?
Well, my road to becoming a therapist was very, I would say, non-standard, as is most of my life, from the joys of being. But at the same time, like, I went and working IT for like maybe 12 years and then went back to school because my wife was just like, you're absolutely awful to deal with when you come back. You got to figure out something to do. And so we sat down and we thought about, like, job wise, what I like doing. I like talking to people and making sure that their side of the story is heard oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And so, especially when it came to neurodivergence and even my own self, like at a young age, one of the frustrations that I even, you know, harbored was the idea of like, I feel like I'm speaking in tongues sometimes to people with like the analogies and the references and the social masking and such that I had to kind of engage in. And I wasn't feeling heard. And so eventually it ended up being like making sure that my specialization in neurodivergence at large spans different kind of ways to be able to connect with people. I'm trying right now to kind of like garner together, in essence, therapeutic D&D for kids who are neurodivergent.
Oh, fantastic.
As a way for them to be able to express themselves. Because at the same time, like, there's no stakes. Yes, it's a character, but it's a fictional universe in particular with this. So like some ways to be able for them to connect where they don't have that social functioning otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that the problem solving aspect of D&D is especially amazing for people that are neurodivergent, because there is a standard way to get, there's fighting, persuasion, everything like that, but just coming up with and having the space to be like, oh, I want to try this. And in a low stakes environment, like if it doesn't work, yeah, you can still fight your way out and it's going to work out. But then sometimes it's like, oh, the dungeon master or whatever doesn't recognize, like, oh, yeah, I guess you could do that. And then everybody, you get immediate validation for thinking creatively. And I think that that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, and trying to like appreciate and be able to validate thinking outside the box in a social setting, because oftentimes neurodiverse kids are set in neurotypical standards like school and so on and so forth. And so when they're met with failure, as opposed to understanding like it's okay to fail, it's not a bad thing, and then having failure intrinsically linked with being good or bad, it's hard to uncouple that a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Safer environment. So that's kind of what we're doing. And one of the joys of being a nerd from jump, where I'm just like, yes, if I can involve any kind of fantasy setting or video games or anything like that, yes, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And we're trying to kind of employ a lot of that at a therapeutic level.
Absolutely. That's great. Yeah. I think that, not to give you a specific thing to possibly look into, but if you run into, I know from myself and some other friends that I tried to play D&D when I was younger, and it was really hard for me to focus on it. And so I didn't start playing until I was an adult, when they kind of synthesized it with 5e. And subsequently, I started playing ICRPG, which is Index Card RPG. And that's, are you familiar?
Very vaguely. It's a lot of times I can't necessarily like use the quote unquote like D&D moniker for a lot of that.
Right.
Totally fine. Wizards of the Coast will come find me and hunt me down. That's a whole different story. But at the same time, for a lot of this, anything tabletop related, I love. It's like the idea of an adaptation of what's called narrative therapy in perspective. So like Index Card specific with this would be like kind of compressing your idea of a character sheet into an index card. Like that's ideal for what
Absolutely.
We're...
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's, you have, the idea is everything you need is on one index card, so you can just quickly reference it. And instead of looking at like five different skills or four different skills or whatever it is tied to a different stat, you're just, oh, you have your strength, you have your charisma, you have this. And if it's in that boat, that's what you roll. But just, it streamlines it a lot more and just like lets you play and adapt. And it's really, really good, because it really helps, I don't know, it helps facilitate the role-playing aspect as opposed to the numbers aspect of, can I do this? Yeah.
It's the same vein of things like we're trying to right now, like trying to find out if we want to include diagnostic criteria in regards to character creation. So for example, like for my character, if I have ADHD, before we set out on an adventure, I have to roll a dice, and depending evens or odds in regards to whatever the number comes on up, I may have misplaced a valuable item. I may have misplaced something like that in regards to, because that's a very typical thing. Like I've forgotten my keys, my phone, so on and so forth before leaving the house. So in the same thing with your adventuring party and seeing how that interacts, or if it would even be an issue for the entire party, because that like social panopticon is the bigger part of that that is oftentimes missed, I feel, in neurodivergence.
Absolutely. Yeah. And having, playing with other neurodivergent people, just I think it would hypothetically facilitate a lot of empathy as well, because like you see in a, you know, that safe environment, oh yeah, that's how, oh well, I've never, you know, thought about how somebody that thinks that way would have struggles with that, but okay, this is, oh, they forgot their medical kit and they're our healer, okay, what am I, we got to figure something out. And that's, I think that would be really, really good for helping people.
Things too is in regards to that too, there's a kid who was like, oh, I'm kind of like, I would hope that my inanimate objects have these emotions that are attached to them, to have fantasy components of that where they can kind of emulate their own empathy through that is really vital too.
Absolutely. How long have you been practicing now?
Oh man, okay, I've been practicing with our private practice for about, I want to say like close to 5 years now. I'm out of field work and doing predominantly private practice. I've worked in a couple of houses that were with individuals who are neurodivergent, but under a particular IQ level at a behavioral setting. And I don't work in those residences anymore. So it's predominantly private practice.
Oh, fantastic. And how How have you liked private practice? Do you feel like you're able to interact and kind of bring your knowledge into other spaces as well?
I think it's great. I'm a big fan of a smaller family setting comparatively to a larger corporate one. I think that there's a lot of beneficial outlets. Like I predominantly do my sessions remotely still. So like I'm still on Zoom and so forth just for pure convenience for folks. But I do think especially comparatively to like any of the more like regulated, don't say like the specific names of this, but like when they're digitally and they're not reviewed by therapists, it's kind of bigger pictures with this. And a private practice, you don't necessarily miss that much because it's so condensed.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Odin, this has been so insightful, and I can't thank you enough. If people wanted to learn more about neurodivergence or learn more about you, where would you recommend that they go?
If they want to kind of chat with myself in particular, I'm at Be Well Counseling. You can go to Be Well NJ, just BeWellNJ.com. And yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. One of the joys of my name being Odin, I'm pretty sure it's just myself and maybe a horse or a dog in New Jersey that has that same name. So
very likely. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's pretty much it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me. You have a good one.
All right. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt Splaining. Quick shout out to Ryan Lawson, who made the theme music for Matt Splaining. He's part of Beat Blender Studios, which can be found at Beat Blender Studios on Instagram and TikTok. Or if you're in the market for some amazing music, you can contact him directly at beatblenderstudios@gmail.com.